Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Sonic Holmes Companion, Dale Graham here, and we did it. This is the inaugural show for 2015, the first day of the calendar year. It's a pleasure to have you here. We had an exceptional year, I think. What else can you say about the year past? It makes us all sound like morons if we walk around saying, you know, it was a terrible year, it just sucked. There was nothing good that came out of it. It tends to reflect a meager attitude, but, you know, there's a lot of serious things going on in the world and a lot of people that aren't doing as well as you and I and the next person, and they need a hand, they need a reason to confirm that the world is an ethical place to be in and that humans are ethical little creatures. And I think we are. I think it's remarkable. We've got a population of 7.125 trillion people, or billion people. My goodness, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Back in the 1900s, there was an analysis that scientists claimed that the population wasn't sustainable. Now, this was brought forward into the 20th century, and again, we hear this alarmist view that we don't have enough space for everybody. Well, the objective, here's that little science moment you've been waiting for. The fact is, we do. What we don't have is a way of distributing all of the food that we can produce. We often hear, you have to wonder, we send a lot of relief to countries that can't sustain themselves. And we're rethinking how that's working, whether people are able to get their feet under them and become self-sustaining. When people are starving, and it always makes you have to wonder, why do we wait until people are starving to give them food? And then we see the pathetic pictures of scenes from the internment camps and the refugee camps around the world. We have a lot. What we need to, I think, send to folks and give them is our planners, our designers, our farmers, our engineers, the people that build things and have to plan ahead. All of those people have to anticipate. In order to make anything work in North America, it all has to be sequenced. And things fit together. And that, all of the things that we have, you and I, the richness of the environment that we're in, didn't come just overnight. And so we want I think we have to realize that what we see as opportunity comes from our history. And it may seem altogether different. It wasn't that long ago that George W. Bush was declaring another crusade in the Middle East. And it's like if my heart could have sunk any deeper, it would have on that day. How stupid to dredge up something that was a stain on the conscience of Christianity, you know, the crusades, to justify an immoral law. So I'm just saying we have to keep our wits about us. Rely on facts, but don't expect people to welcome us with open arms. There is a dignity even in death. But when people are starving, we have an obligation, ethical and moral, to provide for their needs and the needs of their children. It's not that complicated, but it's hugely complicated. So this year, 2015, at least we'll make that, we're making progress. I hope, here's a wish that I hope for you is something that I think is important. I want you to connect. I wish for you that you find the soulmate. You have to wonder, where did that whole term come from? Well, it's interesting enough. It was written, I don't know if it originated with the boy, but it was written in a paper called The Symposium by Plato. What's that, 6th century BC? According to Greek, and it goes something like this. According to Greek mythology, humans were originally created with 4 arms, 4 legs, and a head with 2 faces. Fearing their power, Zeus split them into 2 separate parts, condemning them to spend their lives in search of their other halves. And when one of them meets the other half, the actual half of himself, whether he be a lover of youth or a lover of another sort, the pair are lost in an amazement of love and friendship and intimacy, and one will not be out of the other's sight, as I may say, even for a moment. Love is simply the name for the desire and pursuit of the whole. Love is born into every human being. It calls back the halves of our original nature together. It tries to make one out of two and heal the wound of human nature. What if the man could see beauty itself, pure, unalloyed, stripped of morality and all its pollution, stains, and vanities, unchanged, divine? The man becoming in that communion the friend of God, himself immortal. Would that be a life to disregard? Ah. So that's, I wish and hope that every one of you finds your other half somewhere out there. If you've not already done that, that your other half is there. That's how you know. You're a part of something greater than you. So we've had, it wouldn't be proper on this first day of 2015 to welcome you to Masonic Home Companion without playing a little tune from the Baird, from Robbie Burns. We'll start off this way. It's unusual, but we can get away with a few little eccentricities in this time of year. I think you like this. We'd walk it out. Something that sounds so beautiful. That's by Mary Campbell. And David Francis was playing the guitar for her. Let's celebrate 2015 while it lasts. It's important to realize that what we're looking for, brethren, is an inner peace. And we'll find it. But it means that we have to do a little bit of a search. There is an inner peace, and some of you, all of you, each of you, embraces it and wonders about it. For some of you, it comes across as mindfulness. For others, a state of insight. And for others, a state of not looking for problems where they don't already exist. And for others, just sort of bouncing along like a pebble on the bottom of the trout stream in the current. Never really feeling that they're responsible for very much, but just sort of curious and overwhelmed at times about the scenery as they bounce past. Mahatma Gandhi told us that nobody can hurt me without my permission. Inner peace. This is how we begin to put the ideas of masonry, wrap them around us. Lao Tzu says, the best fighter is never angry. But people like me may tend to follow Gautama Buddha. Peace comes from within. Do not seek it without. It's hard when I think I think Masons, you know, we compromise. Sometimes we get a bit delusional. We're too polite to say that we lie about ourselves and to ourselves, but we do. You know, we're going to join an organization, and what it puts in his lap, I think, is this a big lie? It just puts in our lap that, you know, you work here and you will find enlightenment. Well, shit, man, that's a pretty big step. I'm going from trying to keep the wolf from the door and get through schooling and get a job and raise a family and all the rest of that stuff. Take on some responsibilities, experience losses, try to learn from my mistakes. And then here I am faced with this opportunity. What else can I call it? Opportunity for enlightenment. But it's hard. This isn't, we may celebrate it, but it's hard. It's hard to be able to keep that in mind as we go about our business. So we need prompts. Here's the deal. Masonry gives us all this information and little symbols. Some of them we can carry with us in our pocket, some that we can carry with us in our mind, and some, the best ones, I think, we carry with us in our heart. The moment you realize that the person you cared for has nothing intellectually or spiritually to offer for you but a headache, this is dignity. The moment you realize God has greater plans for you that don't involve crying at night or sad quotes. The moment you realize that no one is your enemy except yourself. the moment you live your dreams, not because of what it will prove or get you, but because that is all you want to do. People's opinions don't matter. The moment you realize the ghost of your ancestor stood between you and the person you loved, they really don't want you mucking up the family line with someone that acts anything less than honorable. It's true, hmm? The moment you realize that you were always the right person, only ignorant people walk away from greatness. The moment you believe that love is not about losing or winning, it is just a few moments in time, followed by an eternity of situations to grow from. The moment you realize that happiness was never about getting a person. They are only a helpmate towards achieving your life mission. Have patience with everything that remains unresolved in your heart. Live in the question. It's amazing. Be at peace. The tranquility that comes from the search. Questions that we can ask ourselves while we're wondering, taking on this big task, like we need a big headache and a big task, and we have to think. We can't just cut the corners. It doesn't work anymore. But we need to be kind and respectful of each other. Remember, nothing external to you has any power over you. This is something that is the internal process. This is you. This is you. This is your essence. This is your function. Be gentle with yourself along the path. Make the journey comfortable. Yeah. Prepare for it. Wear something warm. Something to keep you dry. Something comfortable to sleep on at night. Some food to get by. Some water. Companionship when you need it. Let yourself experience the inner joy. There is a difference between being lonely and being alone. Feeling lonely comes from inside when you let that happen. So be joyful. Be joyful. Do not look for happiness outside yourself. The awakened seek happiness inside. It's corny to walk around talking like that, talking in platitudes. And it's off-putting for a lot of people because they just have difficulty finding that place in their thoughts. It's not something you work into every conversation, but it could. A bird in the hand, a little phrase, teaches us an ethical consideration. You know, little messages that we've been taught by our mothers and by our cultures that help us get through. We'll be there for you. I have your back. Little slogans and sayings that are enormously powerful and build up expectations of ourselves and one another. And it's not like it works or doesn't work. It's all part of the unique chemistry that is you. What do you need today? It changes. Sometimes you'll be serious about it. Sometimes you'll be joyful. But being solemn and being serious are different things. We're not funeral directors. But we can take our work seriously. With a smile on our face, we can listen to a tune or whistle or keep a cadence as we go about our work. And at times there's pleasure in being able to focus our attention and noticing just how easily we're distracted. So for this year, for all of the faithful of Masonic Home Companion, there's a little pearl I'd like you to take away. Being in the moment is one of the difficult things to do until you discover how to do it. It's like everything else. The answer is always simple when you know what it is. Oh, yeah, I knew that. Oh, yeah, I should have known that. How embarrassing. Being in the moment. You ask yourself, when you were caught up in turmoil, what's the nature of it? You know what's really interesting? It's always the same for all of us. We're thinking about something that happened in the past, so we're living in the past. Or we're anxious about something we must do in the future, so we live in the future. Hustle bustle. But then we add this emotional argy-bargy. Lovely term. We're just sort of crashing through the... We, after all, don't have a choice about our existence, do we? The quality of it, we might. But we do live in the moment as we breathe, as we be. So why the struggle? Why the struggle to be something that you're not? You want to be getting ahead and showing that you have some insight? Try not to be a dickhead about it. Not have to prance around like you're, you know, the best thing that's happened since sliced bread. That inner peace comes with a calmness and a humility. Prancing around with the, my friend went to the moon and all they brought me back was this t-shirt with, you know, that's a bit mocky. The more we mock the world around us, the more we deride people for their insensitivity, the more we're describing how we act about everybody. When somebody is speaking in disparaging terms to you about another person, that reveals how they speak about you when you're not around. Yeah. So remember those old sayings about thinking twice. The old carpenters would tell you that, you know, measure twice, cut once. Yeah. But today we're on the brink of a really interesting period. I think I'd like to talk a little bit. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about history. I found an interesting paper by Andrew Prescott. Just incredible. And I'd like to give you a little piece of that here. But I've got some other music that will fit into the show. But right now, I want to go back to the topic du jour, to the point today. I brought you here under the guise of talking about the secrets of Masonic pilgrimage. And obviously we've got quite a few people interested in that. So here's where I left off the sanity. And the only thing, one of the things you'll find, I'm going to talk about a person by the name, a name, Prester John. So I'll leave it for you to do a little bit of work about that. A great deal of our energy was put into trying to find the continent where Prester John existed. Wasn't that long ago, you think it was 16th century, when we were still fussing around trying to find a way to the Orient. 15th century, yeah. Not that long ago. Come on. The chronometer were just developing. Compass hadn't been around all that long, but the idea of the lodestone had. This topic today is just full of understatements, and I apologize if you think that it's just the subscript that everybody already knows. The Creator is without form and beyond mind. I cannot describe what I cannot fully understand. The Creator must be without gender, without malice, forgiving judgment, hope when there is despair, a source of strength to overcome, to aid me, connect, and be a presence in my life. The Creator takes on a clumsy form that my limited mind will understand. My language, my custom, my culture is that of the Creator, infallible perfection. A life from the Creator, lived for the Creator, with the free will. And I make choices, live, learn, and leave this earthly plane. If the volume of the sacred law holds great meaning, then is the law just spiritual experience that has been culturally repressed? Or not? When we once searched for Prester John, we followed a path of discovery that apparently has not stopped. It is not surprising that we have lost this perspective. What is surprising is how readily we were to think it was lost forever. We have ritual followed to create our lodge. I think the reason was not to conduct anything that is dispassionate business and superficial. It's not the reason we created a lodge. It was to create a unique space where we can get into a pure state of mind, or purer. For a moment, a leaving behind of ritual that teaches little, to enter a space where discovering the spirit of masonry is possible. We repeat this pilgrimage to follow Sirius, the star in the east. So have we lost this? It took either above average intelligence or luck. But we stepped over the wreckage of religion and masonry, espoused a lifestyle of ethics. This happened over hundreds of years. I'm thinking it came to those who were contemplative and gradually put form to a concept. Gradually. We like to flatter ourselves that the order has lost its greatness. But there's no evidence to the contrary. No evidence. It makes me wonder. We are the connection with the ancients. If we are the ancients, are we masonry? It hasn't changed. It hasn't. We've been handed expectations, just like the first boys. But the first boys didn't have the complication of sorting through a constitution, the legitimacy of constitution. So this philosophy and ethical style of living and being and functioning required protection because it was thought to be contrary to the best interests of the state and church. But so have the religions run afoul of political ideology that suppressed individual thought. And we still see that around us. Some people call it democracy. We want everybody to experience democracy as we have it here. Well, that's like saying we want everybody to have blue eyes. It ain't going to happen that way. That's not the way the world functions. Unless you're enormously simplistic. What are we going to do? Stick a Big Mac in the hand of everybody that's starving? That's the answer? Really? It's a little more complicated than that. It is painful to watch other people at different stages of their development. But remember, there but for the grace of God, we were there. We were the disenfranchised. Once upon a time, not so very long ago. I began to wonder, as I came up to the end of the 2014, my thoughts became much more nostalgic. And I think probably I'm not the only one tuned in that's thinks that way. And I began to notice, began to question what the space of our lodges were about. It's like this space inside a cathedral. We see these beautiful architecture and engineering, spectacular craftsmanship. And we can go and put our hand on a stone and feel where the carver, where the sculptor took away a layer to reveal something that was inside that. And sometimes it can seem as if it expresses life better than life itself. That's what we call a beauty. But the internal space wasn't created to gawk at all these things or to wonder about them. It was created as a special location where our thoughts can dispel questions of our faith, our belief, our being. Where we can find a worshipful, solemn community. And this, I think, has been what brought Masons, or the original people, together. Was this sense of common respect and similar questions. And we had the ability and the time, the resources, to be able to take an evening and sit and talk about nonsense, really. Where I was brought up, we were taught to be coarse about these types of things. Not just the salty language, but we were taught that there was if it was too heady, too intellectual, that it was bullshit. That's the way it was referred to. Something odorous and unpleasant. Something that real men didn't do. Except when you see the real men, who were those boys, at the latter stages of their life, the fullness of their life, those attitudes seem as remarkably stupid for an older man as they did for a boy. Here, well, let's talk a little bit about history, or something a little more uplifting. Yeah, how about a little tune first? Something from a brother, Duke Ellington. It don't mean a thing. This is from an old recording, so bear with me. It's from 1943, and some of you were probably in the audience when he was playing this tune. This was a song that was done and written in 1931, actually, and the Duke, Brother Ellington, did the music. And it's a jazz masterpiece these days. We recognize it for what it is. It's that swing, huh? Thank you. can you not like that? You can see what they're trying to do. You can see, just take your mind away from all the worries and troubles. Just tap your foot. Makes me think. Here's a question, of course. I need your advice on this one. What did we do with the music in the lodge? You know, it's kind of now bringing topics of ethics and philosophy brings out an enormous self-consciousness in the lodge, a discomfort. But when you look at that space that people like me think is a sacred space, it's hard not to notice that the music is gone. Where did it go? A piano sit in the corner, dusty, broken, untuned. Now we look around the room and we can say, well, really, the general attitude is, well, nobody knows how to play the piano anymore. So why waste the money on the instrument? A horrible thing to do to a piano. What have we done with the music? Music stopped. Music was there to help us all arrive at a state of mind, a similar state of mind. It's like when we listen to Duke Ellington playing music that he wrote in 1931. We can close our eyes and we can think about that period of time. Even the recording and the voices. There weren't multi-track systems. This is a one-off. You can see the talent of these musicians. But we can't imagine a time when the variety of music around us and the availability of it was very limited. So here's something that's sort of hoppy, tapping your foot, happy. But even then, you've seen older men look very uncomfortable, simply because they don't let themselves relate to different types of music. It's unfamiliar. Or they're trying, you hear people desperate to try and define that discomfort. It's black music. It's American music. All ways of trying to get some control on their own anxiety created by music. Except for our brethren in the York Rite, who have continued to bring music into the ritual. Singing a song together helps to bring everybody to a point of awareness. Craft Lodge has lost that. We don't have to learn how to play the instrument anymore. We have a piano. We have new instruments. We have wireless instruments. We can bring a symphony. We can bring a choir. We can bring a soprano or a tenor. We can bring the music that has meaning to us into the lodge. So what have we done with the music? Well, more interesting question is, what's happened when we took the music out? When we let music go? Well, what's happened is we start meetings without that sense of any sense of spirituality. Truly, truly, we get right down to the business. The focus isn't on the point of the business, it's on the business, the minutes, the expenditures. Oh my God, is there no help? You see, there is one lodge that I will tell you about in Ontario that not only has found the music, but embraces it. It's over in Bath, near Kingston. Go over and check it out. Write to the secretary and ask permission to attend so that they can prepare and negotiate with you. They take their work and their lodge seriously. It's not snob appeal. My goodness. It's the way the work of that lodge happens. A respect for preserving that sacred space. So don't think that it's not out there. It's just not in most of the lodges. So there is no start. Or you can go to the beautiful lodge, great bunch of people in Toronto. When I was last there, I was serenaded. We were serenaded with Rachmaninoff. It was beautiful. And you were given the option. If you wanted to go and sit and talk about the, you know, the work of the day or the price of tires or a liter of gas, go and do that. But for about 10 minutes before the opening of the lodge, you also had the option to go and sit quietly listening to this music. I experienced it as something very powerful. But you were given the choice. It wasn't like your mom was dragging you to Sunday school and you had to sit there and not squirm. It's like, grow up. You bought into it. Take it on. Do it right. Instead of cutting corners. But how did we let that go? Our friends in Bath, our brethren in Bath, also, when you're leaving, after you've gone through this experience, there's something different that happens in that lodge. Something more respectful, purposeful, organized. It's like everybody's on the same page. It's absolutely amazing feeling. So where masonry may be sparked in the mind, it's experienced in the heart, obviously. You walk away with that frame of mind brought on by listening to a passage of music selected for a purpose, which is explained to you. And then what do? You absolutely relax. No rush. You sit down, you relax, you eat, you talk, you refresh yourselves with other fellows, and you're able to continue the conversation. It's pretty cool. Very cool. So, yeah, I'm saying, bring back the music. Bring it back. Do you ask yourself, is two-thirds of masonry good enough? I say not so. Business, absolutely essential. Got to pay the bills. Got to pay the heat. The upkeep and maintenance. No, I can't go into lodges where it smells of mold. That's unhealthy. Any fool knows that. And that reveals the care and concern, the pride of ownership, or the lack of it. Not everybody's a good farmer. You go and look at the places. Some places are derelict, and other places are spruced up with a coat of paint. Same with the lodge. Even before somebody puts their hand out to speak to you, just go, what the hell is that? Yeah, we can bring this back. So that's one part. The other part is the ritual. Whether somebody understands and probes for the deeper meaning or not, that's the second part. And it's important for those who understand the importance of it. You can go through the ritual and only be superficially connected to it. Perfectly fine if that's your inclination. Or you can plumb the depths of ritual. Third part of masonry is the spirituality. Spirituality, that connection with our greater being in the moment, mindful. And that's where some interesting things begin to happen. Because when we walk away, our lodges have that emotional impact on us. So instead of thinking about what was annoying and what wasn't there, which is often the case if you admit it to yourself, think about what was there. Think about the way it's intended to, it was designed. This was a design. Now, we frigged with that design, but the design is still there. It may have a little dust on the bonnet, but give it a wash. Spruce it up. It's all there. You take from it what you will. Don't expect everybody in the room to do the same. Not everybody's comfortable listening to adding music or thinking as here, explaining to the world that you are the ancients. You're no different. You are the ancients. You are masonry. Oh, I know. I catch all kinds of hell for saying things like that. Masonry is obviously a grand lodge. Well, masonry functions because it requires the protections of Grand Lodge. But Freemasonry was around before Grand Lodge. Philosophy and ethics. Belief. Spirituality. They were all there. The sense of fraternal joy was there before Freemasonry. Yeah. It's a fact. There is a connection, though, with the music that we're doing here. Early Masonic songs refer to each brother being expected to tell a story or sing a song, possibly suggesting that the order was already dividing between the serious thinkers who were disposed to seek for the light with a view of improving the lot of mankind generally, and those who saw it as a form of social club or benefit society. Now, remember Anders Onifers. Remember his the first lecturer, Sankey lecturer, and Andreas, lovely, just an absolute gentleman, was talking to me about the Swedish ritual. That was where he was brought into the craft. And in fact, one of the elements of the ritual was that he was required to write poetry and to perform music. So this was, I thought, just fascinating. There's some other things about masonry in Sweden that are just amazing. But this is a place where the cultural identity has been quite frank. Here in this beautiful country, we are developing. We're still in the stage of development. We're young. We have great potential, but we still need mentoring. We still need trial and error. Still need to screw up and learn from our mistakes as a nation. And we're fortunate. We're bringing so many very talented, well-educated people from all over the world into this country. If that's not a mark of achievement, I don't know what is. We have done it. It's been going on for a long, long time. So, we're still looking at the works of Freemasonry and the search for utopias. I think we'll go on. Do you mind? So remember, the early songs refer to each brother telling a story or singing a song and suggesting there was already a dividing between the serious thinkers and those who saw this as a social club. The former group moved towards a form of philosophical society. I guess Masonic Home Companion would be guilty of that crime, where papers were read and discussed. The latter moved toward a quasi-social benefits club approach, with a focus principally upon mutual support and brotherhood. This may be an unfair comment, since various writers of the period, 1770 and 1840, refer to occasions when Masons work in a serious manner before joining in the cheerful festivities that follow. Many contemporary lodges work seriously upstairs and enjoy convivial, even musical festive boards afterwards. The changes that were shaping 19th century life and work were mirrored among Masons. In an increasingly prosperous but risk-based industrial society, the Lodge offered opportunities for business and political acquaintance. It became an agency for what in contemporary society would be called networking. Oh, I think the writer is being quite modest. Britain at the time was one of the most, if not the most, socially stratified cultures on the world. You knew your place. Here in Canada, we never quite got around to that, you know. We didn't start that way. Oh, the people that knew their place came over and tried to impose that. We're still dealing with the political fallout of that kind of thinking. But we were certainly more like the kind of person that knew that there was some benefit in being mutually supportive. And basically, we were all alike. Certainly, our Masonic history is full of stories about great men who helped to shape this country, who seemed to be very, very normal in so many ways. The tradition of the traveling journeyman operative became revitalized through the practice of visiting. The framework of the ancient charges became the philosophical framework of modern masonry, and the emerging awareness of philanthropy gave a wider dimension to the concept of charity. Inevitably, fragmentation occurred. The division into ancients and moderns was healed by the emergence of the United Grand Lodge, leading to an attempt to standardize ritual and practice. European groups like the Conspiracy of Equals, the Carbonari, and the Illuminati professed ideas that a modern Mason would recognize, but allowed political factors to shape their presentation to and role in society, and by so doing attracted new forms of criticism and persecution. From this followed a mistrust of Freemasonry as a subversive force in society. A similar development was taking place in France, where Claude-Henri de Saint-Simon, 1760-1825, was exploring the way in which a science of man and society could be fashioned. He was ridiculed and prosecuted in his day, largely because of the way in which he illustrated his theories. After Waterloo, it was not a wise move to propose the unification of England and France, nor was it wise to identify the aristocracy as drones after the restoration of a monarchy. Saint-Simon sought to create a positive science of society based on reason. His ardent plea for a society based on reason that respected work sought a terrestrial morality and regarded all aspects of human endeavor as worthy of equal respect, suggested that utopia was not a dream, but a perfectly rational reality. These are fundamentally sound Masonic criteria. He went further than Pomfret, who wrote about generalities built around the benevolence of his own social group, by steering a course toward an idealization of brotherly feeling. His ideas may have preceded those of Karl Marx, but he was seeking his vision of an ideal world based on individual equality and reason, at a time when Freemasonry was beginning to offer a pathway to such a world, also based on equality and reason. So here we have reference to a Jewish intellectual scholar, Karl Marx. Throughout the Western world, there arose movements seeking to establish utopian communities. In England, these range from genuinely philanthropic ventures like Ham Green and other early ventures set up by Robert Owen to vaguely religious communities with links to fringe religious groups and communities resembling contemporary co-eco dwellers. Each was seeking a utopian world fashioned in its own image. Each was intrinsically selfish or at best self-interested. Yet Robert Owen's vision of a utopian society, with his emphasis on human perfectibility by instruction and example, his dismissal of sectarian difficulties and his emphasis on equality, was moving into a quasi-Masonic field before he moved into the realm of political philosophizing. It even attracted the opposition of the established churches on grounds very similar to those used to oppose Freemasonry. We're going to stop there. We'll come back and we'll talk about the links between the upper classes and the church through the practice of something called Advowson, A-D-V-O-W-S-O-N. That was a Catholic revival of mid-century and the emergence of nonconformism. So we'll come back and talk about that next time I see you. I always find this work is a bit of an eye-opener. You know, my jaw hits the ground and some of the things that seem so utterly contrary to the simple, you know, happiness that surrounds Freemasonry. Don't think about the problems. Just accept them as the way they are and we'll move on. What that needs from each one of us is a bit of a reminder. So when you're looking at the squares, the square compasses, use them as reminders that the person that you're, if it's a personality that's distracting you, it's a person, that's a person who may or may not have discovered the other half of their self. Plato might be right. Zeus may have been so afraid of the power of the whole person that he felt compelled to cut them in half. And for the rest of time, we proceed to search for our other half so that we can become whole again. I'll look, but such is the nature of Masonry, isn't it? Let's listen to this. So this is a tune from, you'll figure it out, it's from the 30s. Thank you. time ago. Hey, buddy, don't get on me. That was your grandmother singing that. Those are the girls of the day. Huh? Don't you be getting on me about it. Don't you get all up on me. That's your grandmother. And then we'll play some more music from the 20s. Give you a bit of an idea of these people weren't as stiff as they're made out to be. So get over it. These are folks that are just like you and I. So what do we see people pretending to be something that they're not? And what do they leave? A legacy of people questioning who they are and what the purpose of it all is about. Is it so hard just to act the way we are and carry on our beliefs as we think it should be done? Live the right life. I'll play a few more songs. We're going to talk about your... I'll leave you, too, because you have to celebrate 2015. This is the Blue Moon, the second full moon in a month. Of course, the Blue Moon. Enjoy the year. We'll see you soon.